Broadcasting from the secret military base in Summit Township. This is On the Docket with Connor Dockery.
Who do you think you are?
Weekdays at noon on Jackson's Fox Sports 101.9 FM. Presented by Knutson's Sporting Goods, your outdoor convenience store. Kettlebell Hotspot, where your functional fitness begins. Bud Light, Bella Notte Ristorante, and Tri-County Water. That's good water.
Welcome into On the Docket. It is a Tuesday edition of the program. Thanks again to Luke for filling in yesterday. Yesterday, of course, was the Jackson Chamber of Commerce golf outing, which I was in. Had a nice 18 holes of golf. Very fun. Very fun indeed. Beautiful course, the Country Club of Jackson. So that's what I was occupied with yesterday as Luke filled in for me on these airwaves. So back to business for this Tuesday edition of the program. Got the Tigers, my thoughts on the Pistons series. Wrapping up over the weekend, of course. NBA, NHL playoffs. Going to have a special interview later in the show as well with a NASCAR Cup Series driver, AJ Allmendinger. Recorded that earlier this morning with our sister station, 95.9 The Power Cow, which is Jackson's radio home for NASCAR Cup Series racing. So we're also going to air that interview right here on this show later on. Going to start off with the Tigers and Guardians. Game one of a four-game series was yesterday, and not a good start for the Tigers as they fall 8-2. So I think that's part of the big problem with this Tigers team lately. The hitting is overall on a cold spell. Tigers really struggling to score runs as of late. And even with a lot of these pitching injuries, I think part of it, too, is some of the Tigers' better pitchers have been struggling as well. So it's just you got kind of everything going wrong for this Tigers team at this time. So big four-game series, especially with the Tigers that are starting to sputter out of the American League Central Division standings, currently in fourth place, 6.5 games now behind Cleveland, who leads the division. But also starting to slowly fall out of wild card contention. I mean, a lot of the American League is pretty mid right now as well. Tigers are only 2.5 games out of the wild card. But Tigers have to try to find a way to turn this around. Not able to get it turned around yesterday with this big four-game series. Because this is a big series for the Tigers, especially these last three games, if you want to try to make ground in this division. At least try to get this season turned around in terms of the getting some wins. 20-28 on the season, which is not good. We're approaching the 50-game mark. You don't want to be around 10 games under 500, 50 games in. That's it's not good. Of course, it has not been good for the Tigers this season. Mentioned in big part because of the injuries, but even before the injuries, the Tigers got off to a little bit of a slow start, and then the injuries just compounding things. Yikes. So yesterday, we had Slade Ciccone getting the start for the Cleveland Guardians, who has not had that great of a season. And then Framber Valdez, who has mostly been pretty good for the Tigers, but recently he's been, not so good. Of course, a big part of that was his suspension, getting ejected from that horrible start against the Red Sox. Bounced back with a pretty good start against the New York Mets, 2 runs in 6 2/3 innings, but then not so good yesterday, 4 runs in 5 innings four walks and three strikeouts with five hits, which, man, how many of these Tigers pitchers are going to be struggling with the walks this season? I mean, it's been a massive problem for this Tigers team. So, did get off to a good start, however, with Valdez. Retired the Guardians in order. Then the bottom of the first inning, Tigers did get some early runs. Well, one early run. Yeah, the Tigers actually led in the game that they lost 8-2. Ken McGonigal, one out single. And then a Dylan Dingler force out, getting McGonigal out at second. But Dingler, of course, on base now. And then a Riley Green one run double, making it 1-0 for the Tigers. Nothing doing for the Guardians in the second inning, despite getting a couple of base runners on. And then Tigers retired in order, bottom of the second. Here we go, back to the top of the third. This is when the Guardians take the lead for good. Starts with a leadoff triple for Brian Rocchio. You have a ground out, a walk, so runners on the corners with one out. And then Chase DeLauder, prized rookie for the Guardians. He grounds out, but does score a run, so two outs with a base runner on. And then Rhys Hoskins, a one-run double. So just like that, 2-1 Cleveland. Tigers, again, do nothing in the third inning, as does Cleveland do nothing in the fourth inning. Pretty quick innings right there. And then a fifth inning, this is when the Guardians add to their lead. They make it 4-1. Starts with a leadoff walk. Been happening too often this season for the Tigers pitching. Leadoff walk, a single, and then a single. Back-to-back singles, loading the bases. You have another forced out, a RBI ground out. Chase DeLauder scoring a run. And then Rhys Hoskins, a sacrifice fly, scoring that second run. So 4-1 Cleveland. Tigers again out in order. Are you really that surprised? And then this is when the game got out of hand, the sixth inning. Brant Herder coming in to replace Framber Valdez, who, again, he is one of the solid relief pitchers on this Tigers team, but he has had his struggles lately. And this game is no exception. Put himself into a bad situation. Leadoff single, you have a walk, a sacrifice bunt to move up both runners in a scoring position, and then another walk to load the bases. So bases loaded, one out. That is it for Brant Herder. Connor Siebold, who is back in off the IL, he comes in, and then immediately, bam, one run single, bases loaded, continues, and then a double that nearly emptied the bases, scored two runs, and then just like that, 7-1. Is the score, and Tigers just would not have the opportunities to try to come closer. Just not really able to get consistent base runners in this one. And by proxy, if you're not getting base runners, you don't have opportunities really to score runs. So 8-2 is the final. Cleveland 9 hits to Detroit's 5. And a significant problem for the Tigers in this one was the walks. 7 walks. Tigers, meanwhile, only drawing 3 walks on the game. And that's Cleveland's strength, is pitching. And quite frankly, that's actually the Tigers' strength as well, is pitching. But the pitching is not healthy right now. And even the better pitchers that are healthy right now aren't performing to the level that they need to. So it's just tough. It's just one of those seasons so far for the Tigers where not a lot is going their way. Major out of sync Tigers team right now. So that's game one of the series. We still have time for the Tigers to get this individual series turned around, however. Tonight, you've got Keiter Montero on the mound, who has been obviously doing some good things. He struggled in his last start, however, against the Mets. But like him on the mound, Parker Messick, who has had a a great season so far for the Guardians. He is getting the start. He initially pitched in some games last year, 7 games last year, and he's already pitched in 9 games this year. So essentially a rookie, but he's been great, sub-3 earned run average, sub-1 whip. So he's been good. Good young pitcher there for the Cleveland Guardians. So possibly another low-scoring game tonight. Tigers need to find a way to get some runs. Got to get this offense turned around quickly. I mentioned, you know, injuries mostly affecting the pitching side. But when you have a guy like Zach Short on your major league roster, I mean, that's not a good sign. Zach Short in 8 games with the Tigers has yet to collect a hit. He's just drawn 3 walks. That's it. In 15 plate appearances. So, yeah, not good. Definitely not good right there. But the Tigers, they got to get this going, man. Get this thing turned around. Still time in this series. So, Montero tonight. You've got likely a bullpen game tomorrow. And then on Thursday, final game of this 4-game series, projected to be Casey Mize getting the start, which, despite the Tigers' loss on Saturday, it was nice to see Casey Mize back on the mound with him missing a few starts in there with his injury that he sustained against the Braves at the end of April. Tigers desperately need him back. So, brutal. It's brutal right now for the Detroit Tigers. They gotta find a way to get this thing turned around, or else even with Tarek Skubal coming back sooner rather than later, it sounds like, then, you know, is it even going to make that much of a difference? I mean, Skubal pitching only once out of every 5 games, you know, he can only do so much. And even by proxy, even in the games he is pitching, and the team's still got to score runs, which has not been happening a lot as of late. So game two of this Guardians series is tonight at 6:40. We'll have the live coverage for you right here on Jackson's Fox Sports at 101.9 FM. Obviously, the Pistons eliminated on Sunday. Very disappointing game 7. So I'm going to give my own thoughts on how that series unfolded. This is not the Pistons season autopsy. I'm going to try to get to that this week, tomorrow, probably. Do a more in-depth look at the season as a whole. This is just me wrapping up the second round series against the Cleveland Cavaliers. This is On the Docket, back in 3 minutes.
On the Docket with Connor Dockery, weekdays at noon.
On the Docket, brought to you by Knutson Sporting Goods, Bellinoti Ristorante, Bud Light, Tri-County Water, and Kettlebell Hotspot, whose expert coach is a Team USA Kettlebell Sports Lifting representative with over 20 years of experience. This is where you go to build raw functional strength and core stability, improve your cardiovascular endurance and metabolic conditioning, and enhance your mobility, balance, and coordination. So what are you waiting for? Join the teams today. Kettlebell Hotspot in Spring Arbor, where your functional fitness begins. So for the Pistons-Cavs series, Game 6 was on Friday. We knew Pistons' backs against the wall. They blew it in Game 5, a chance to really take control of this series and try to take a 3-2 series lead going on the road, a chance to wrap this one up in Game 6. They blew it, obviously, at the end of the game. Ended up losing in overtime. So Pistons, they've now found that they found themselves in the position they had to go on the road and get a win against a Cleveland Cavaliers team that had yet to lose a home game in the playoffs. This Cavs team, they've been spectacular in Cleveland. But the Pistons, this was one of the best games that they've played in the playoffs. Was Game 6 on Friday, going on the road You have to get this big win. And that's exactly what they did. It was a very close first half, just a three-point lead at halftime. But the third quarter, that's when the Pistons really shifted this in their favor. And they just continued to pull away in the fourth quarter. They led by as many as 22 points in this one. And the Pistons took care of business, but had one of their best shooting games of the playoffs. 52% from the floor, 44% from three. And they forced the Cavs to struggle shooting. I mean, they shot 34% from three, which isn't horrible, but they're only 39% from the floor. 39% from the floor overall. They had a slight edge on the rebounds. They had a 22 points in the paint edge, which is something that has not been common this series. This series, it's actually been the Cavs that have been the team that has dominated the points in the paint differential. But the Pistons getting the job in this one. The job done, I should say. 14-8 fast break points. 30 points off of 20 Cavs turnovers. So the Pistons getting back to more of what they were doing in games one and two in terms of making the Cavs pay for their mistakes, their sloppy play, their turnovers. And then a lot of solid contributions on the Pistons as well. Of course, Cade Cunningham, 7 of 19, 21 points, 8 assists, did have 7 turnovers. But Jalen Duren actually stepping up for a change, which has not been really said much in this playoffs. 15 points, 11 rebounds, 7 of 10 shooting, 3 blocks and a steal, which is huge. And then how about Paul Reed? 17 points in just 16 minutes off the bench. This guy's been proving himself to be a valuable commodity to this Pistons team in the playoffs, no less. 7 of 9 shooting. This guy, how can you dislike what Paul Reed brings to this team? You had Duncan Robinson off the bench with 14 points, 4 of 7 from 3. I know you've been seeing Duncan Robinson in this series deal with some injuries. But I think part of it, too, is to try to get Danis Jenkins in the starting lineup. This Pistons team needs another shot creator in the starting lineup. And Duncan Robinson, very one-dimensional, catch-and-shoot, three-point shooter. Can't really create his own shot. And then Jalen Duren was shrinking in the spotlight. Puts too much pressure on Cade to be the only real shot creator. While on top of that, he's also trying to create opportunities for his teammates as well. But no, good stuff for the Pistons in Game 6. And that forced Game 7. All right, here we are. Sunday, Game 7. Win or go home, Pistons. This is what you play hard all season for. To clinch home court advantage so that you could be at home for a game like this. And then that great second half that the Pistons had in Game 6 just did not transfer over. Pistons got punched in the mouth in this one. It took them a little bit to get going offensively. And I think part of it, too, it's not like the Pistons were really playing poorly, if that makes sense. They just really were not making shots early on. They got a lot of wide open looks, even layups and dunks for that matter. There was even a missed lob in this one. So the Pistons, they could not make their makeable shots early. The Cavs did. And just like that, the Cavs are, you know, already building a double-digit lead. It's like, all right, what's going on here? We got to figure this out. And given the Pistons' track record for defensive success, not only in this series, not only in the postseason, but the season as a whole, I was sitting there with the feeling of, all right, Pistons are going to amp it up defensively. They're going to lock down the Cavs. And their offense is going to get going. Even if it doesn't truly get 100% going, as long as the defense can really step up, they can really shift the game in their favor in that way. But it just didn't happen. And this was an uncharacteristic game of the Pistons from a defensive standpoint. The Cavs, for several stretches in this one, especially in the second half, it's like they were just doing what they wanted. They were almost toying with the Pistons at times. 51% shooting from the floor for the Pistons, for the Cavs, sorry. I believe that might be the only game that an opponent shot over 50% against the Pistons in this playoffs. It's been rare. But then the Pistons, their offense failed to rise to the occasion. Only 35% shooting from the floor. And then even more uncharacteristically, some of these other stats that the Pistons were themselves known for dominating all season long. They got out-rebounded by 17. They got outscored in the paint by 24. Outscored by 7 on second chance points. So, I mean, the Cavs, no other way to cut it. They showed up to play this game 7. They were the hungrier team. They outworked the Pistons thoroughly. And it is a tough way for this Pistons team to go out. And I'm going to break it down in a little bit more detail in the Pistons season autopsy when I look at the season as a whole. You know, disappointing way to end the season, yes, but the season was not a disappointment. And we saw comments after the game by head coach J.B. Bickerstaff saying that same thing. This season was not a disappointment. And I do agree with that. In the grand scheme of things, you look at where this Pistons team was last year, shoot, even 2 years ago, 14-win season, 28-game or whatever losing streak, to turn it around 2 years later and you're a 60-win team, even just ignore the wins in the regular season for a moment. You come off a season that you win only 14 games. The following season, you make the playoffs, and then 2 seasons after that. After that 14-game winning season, you are going to Game 7 in the second round of the playoffs. I mean, especially with the lack of playoff success for this Pistons team in the last close to 20 years. I mean, absolutely, this season is a success. Obviously, when you look at it isolated to just this season, sure, a team that is the number one seed in the Eastern Conference for the entire season, 160 games, you know, being out in the second round, that's, you know, in itself, you would hypothetically want a team that wins at least 60 games to be at least in the conference finals. But no, in the grand scheme of things with this Pistons organization, this season has been absolutely a big success, big step forward for this franchise. They do have some things to clean up in the offseason, which, again, we will talk about in the Pistons season autopsy. But yeah, good season overall for the Pistons. Definitely take it. They got a great young group. And along with that, you're going to take your lumps in the playoffs. I like to look at it in relation to my Denver Nuggets. Being a young team, rising, you're accumulating young talent. You got some young stars on the team. Once you get that core built, then the next step is like, okay, how do we develop? We already developed as a good regular season team, getting some good playoff seeding, but how do we take the next step in excelling in the playoffs? And takes me back to 2019, so 7 seasons ago. That was the first time that the Nuggets had made the playoffs, I believe, in 6 years at that point. They ended up gutting out. It was very similar to this Pistons team in the sense that they had to really gut out a 7-game series win against the Spurs. Nuggets at that time were the number 2 seed, so they were nearly upset by a 7-seed Spurs team that no more Tim Duncan. He had retired by then. They traded Kawhi Leonard. So really a starless Spurs team at that time. They nearly eliminated the Nuggets, but the Nuggets did hunker down. They did grind out that series. seven-game series, just like the Pistons had to against the Magic in the first round this year. And then the second round of the playoffs, they end up getting knocked out by the Portland Trail Blazers. Very similar type of team with this Cleveland Cavaliers team. You got a couple of high-scoring guards, some bigs on that team. So, but the Nuggets, same thing. They play at home for Game 7. They get, actually, the Nuggets in that game, they actually went up, I think, 20, but then they completely collapsed in the second half and ended up losing that game, whereas in this one, the Pistons got punched in the mouth. Point being, when you're that young, up-and-coming team, even though you take a massive step forward in the regular season, you finally win a playoff series, it's a whole other thing to actually sustain that success through the playoffs. And obviously we wanted this Pistons team to continue going on, but I mean, let's be honest, based on how they were playing through the playoffs, it didn't really feel sustainable that they were going to keep winning these series, especially the Cavs. Once they found that recipe for success in games 3 and 4 in this series, they really turned it around in their favor, winning 3 straight games, taking a 3-2 lead. Obviously, the Pistons were able to recover and force Game 7, but that's the next stage in the Pistons' growth. Now we know the recipe for success of the regular season and even to win individual series. But now, where does this Pistons team go to try to turn that into a deep postseason run? And that's going to be the question for this Pistons team moving forward. But again, disappointing end of the series. I really did have the Pistons winning this series. And even at the end of the day, I think this still was a very winnable series. But I think at the end of the day, just some of that experience on this Cavs team playing a factor in that. But of course, some more of these questions we will look to answer in the Pistons season autopsy. Likely going to be doing that tomorrow, so stay tuned for that one. Switching gears on the other side, I guess pun intended for that matter. Doing some NASCAR talk on the other side as we were able to sit down for an over-the-phone interview with NASCAR Cup Series driver AJ Allmendinger. Doing an interview with him earlier this morning. Going to air that interview next. This is On the Docket, back in 3 minutes.
On the Docket with Connor Dockery, weekdays at noon.
On the Docket, brought to you by Knutson Sporting Goods, Kettlebell Hotspot, Bono T. Ristorante, Bud Light, Tri-County Water, and our friends at Pauly's Country Markets. See the deals online at country-markets.com. Sign up for My Market Rewards. Start saving even more in store today. That's country-markets.com for Pauly's Country Markets. See one of the convenient locations around Jackson County today. So we were able to record an interview earlier this morning with NASCAR Cup Series driver AJ Allmendinger. Without further ado, here is that recorded conversation. 95.9 The Power Cow is Jackson's radio home for NASCAR Cup Series racing. And joining me via the telephone is NASCAR Cup Series racer AJ Allmendinger. AJ, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. So I'll have you start off just a little quick backstory on how you got started in racing.
It was always a family thing. My dad just loved racing growing up. I'm named after AJ Foyt, which was his favorite race car driver. He just raced. My dad just raced local dirt track stuff in California. So I was either watching him as a kid or we were at some sort of sprint car race watching it happen. Honestly, I always thought I'd kind of go to the dirt path, but never really happened. And race Indy cars and for a couple years and been in NASCAR for almost 20 years.
Hey, sometimes it's something simple as that, and you never know what direction that it's going to take you. And evidently it's taking you on a quite a good path here with NASCAR. And you've pretty much most of the time raced in the Cup Series. Also spent some time in the Craftsman Truck Series, which you've actually raced in both this season. What are some of the differences with racing in a truck versus a normal stock car? And is there a preference that you have, one or the other?
Yeah, it's been fun this year. Our race team, College Racing, and Dodge and Ram has come back into the sport. Dodge hadn't been in the sport for, I think about 14 years now. So they're back full-time with College Racing, our race team, and we got five trucks. So I hadn't driven a lot of trucks in my life. I've only probably done 15 races total over the 20 years, but to get back in a truck's been a lot of fun. They're a lot longer, like the way the side force and the truck body is compared to a cup car, it handles a lot different, just the way the air moves around. But I think, you know, both are tough to drive just in their own ways, but it's been fun to do a couple of truck races this year.
Yeah, getting back to those, because I know it's been a couple years since you've done some of those truck series races. And with the Cup Series races, talk about some of the differences for you in terms of doing a standard oval track versus a road track, and then also why some racers excel at one over the other.
Yeah, I mean it's completely different techniques, and you know they're both hard in their own right to figure out. You know, I've always felt like for me, my background was road course driving. Like I raced karts for many years growing up, and then when I raced in IndyCar, at the time the series was called Champ Car, it was predominantly road and street course races. So that was kind of always my background. And you know, really, when I came to NASCAR, you know, nearly 20 years ago, I hadn't been on hardly any ovals, so I had to learn the techniques of oval racing, and it's more of a finesse at most racetracks. The way you kind of roll in the corner. I think sometimes on an oval, the way the car handles is a little bit more important. But there are things drivers can do at certain types of racetracks about how close they run to the wall, and where they run on the racetrack to gain more grip. You know, on road course side of it, it's more about your braking techniques and your downshifting techniques, and how you go about that to kind of excel and get the most out of the race car. And I think a driver can make a little bit more of a difference, but you still have to have a good car on a road course, especially in the Cup Series, to be competitive. So just different techniques, but, I mean, they're hard, both of them, to try to learn. And, you know, I think in NASCAR, I mean, there's about five different types of ovals and road courses that you go on. So there's all different types of racetracks you got to learn.
Yeah, and it's all tough, and you know, some racers, as you mentioned, you know, road course versus oval, and even just specific courses as well, can play a benefit depending on what your strengths are and such. And so, this 2026 season for you in the Cup Series side, you've got two top 10 finishes, Circuit of the Americas and Watkins Glen. Also on the Truck Series side, got a top 10 finish in there as well. Just go ahead and chat about how you felt your 2026 season has gone.
Yeah, so, you know, for the listeners that don't, you know, have never really heard of the in-depths of what a NASCAR team goes through or anything like that, we're kind of in a unique situation in the sense of, you know, going back to the truck side of it, with us bringing Dodge and Ram back into the sport, on the Cup side of it, you know, we have Chevrolets, but in this sport, it takes to be kind of at your peak as a race team, you need manufacturer help and support in so many different ways, whether that's financially, information that you get from those manufacturers, and everything that goes into that. You could talk about it for hours, but the point of why I say this is, on the Cup side of it, we have no manufacturer support. You know, and in the future, we're hoping to bring Dodge to the Cup side of it, and that's where hopefully College Racing kind of excels and kind of keeps moving forward in the sport. But so for us right now, we are on our own, and we don't have any information being given to us from other teams or you know, as a manufacturer. And, you know, each weekend is a little bit of a guess. We don't have any sim that other teams have through their manufacturer. So it's hard sometimes because we're 20th in points and we always want more, but for what we're up against right now, I feel like so far the first third of the season's went fairly well, and hopefully we can kind of just keep building on that.
For sure, for sure. Joined on the telephone by a NASCAR Cup Series driver, AJ Allmendinger. Next race coming up Sunday, Charlotte Motor Speedway, the Coca-Cola 600. What are some of the things that you're looking forward to in this race, this track?
Well, you know, if you speak in golf terms, you know, this is one of our majors. You know, the Daytona 500, the Southern 500, you know, the Coca-Cola 600. This is one of the biggest races in the sport that we have. It's also our longest race, 600 miles. You know, we'll be in the race car for nearly 5 hours. And we start in the day, late afternoon. Charlotte Motor Speedway is known for being hot and slick. Cars are going to slide around, and that'll kind of transfer into the nighttime. And as that happens, your car balance changes, and you got to constantly keep up with the racetrack. As a driver, you got to keep up with the racetrack. So it's one of our toughest races. I think mentally it is our toughest race just because you're in the car for so long and you can't kind of let your guard down at any moment because we're averaging 180 miles per hour around the racetrack. So it's a fun race. It's a grueling race. But more importantly, you know, Memorial Day weekend, we get to honor our veterans and you know, the men and women that have made the ultimate sacrifice for our freedom that allows us to go do this every weekend. So each driver and team kind of represent a family, and you know, more often than not, that family comes out and we remember and honor. So it's an important weekend for so many reasons, and it's one of our better weekends, I feel like, that we have in the sport.
Yeah, of course. It's going to be fun race to watch, and of course, important on the Memorial Day aspect. You can catch the race on Amazon Prime. Also have radio coverage on 95.9 The Power Cow. Well, AJ, it's been a fun chat. Thanks for hanging out with me, and good luck in this race coming up on Sunday.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Once again, that was NASCAR Cup Series driver AJ Allmendinger ahead of the Coca-Cola 600 coming up on Sunday, with the race starting at 6 o'clock, pre-race coverage starting at 5 o'clock on 95.9 The Power Cow. So there you go. Very nice interview as we wrap up the show. On the other side, NBA, NHL playoffs, all that fun stuff. This is On the Docket back in 3 minutes.
On the Docket with Connor Dockery, weekdays at noon.
On the Docket, brought to you by Knutson Sporting Goods, Kettlebell Hotspot, Bellinote Ristorante, Bud Light, and Tri-County Water. One more segment to wrap up the show on this Tuesday. So we are pretty much in conference finals season. I mean, season. Maybe not a good way to put it. But anyways, getting underway in the conference finals last night in the NBA. NHL conference finals set to get underway as well. But first, we had a very exciting series finish for the Montreal Canadiens and the Buffalo Sabres. So going back to Thursday, we had the Canadiens absolutely smoke the Sabres 6-3. Now, I should say, actually, in the second and third periods, they absolutely smoked the Buffalo Sabres. It was a very high-scoring game, 3-2 at the end of the first period, and most of those goals were within a four-minute span. So Buffalo, playing at home as well for this Game 5, they actually led 3-2 after the first period, but then a three-goal second period by the Canadiens made it 5-3, and then a power play goal in the third made it the 6-3 final score. So the Canadiens at that time taking a 3-2 series lead, going home for Game 6, chance to punch their ticket to the Eastern Conference Finals in the NHL. But Buffalo on the road, getting the big win, 8-3. Very similar to the previous game But the roles were reversed. It was Buffalo. They got the first goal. And then Montreal came back with three unanswered goals within a nine-minute span. That first goal, by the way, Rasmus Dahlin, 30 seconds in. And then a Jason Zucker goal by Buffalo made it 3-2 at the end of the first period. Montreal in front, and then a three-goal second period, and then three more goals in the third period for the Buffalo Sabres. One of those being an empty net goal. 8-3. So now it's like, all right, momentum shifts back. Buffalo at home. Game 7. Instead, it's the Montreal Canadiens getting off to a big start. 2-0 after the first period. But Buffalo coming all the way back. He had a goal in the second period. And then Rasmus Dahlin, another goal in the third period, ties the game. Game goes to overtime. And Alex Newhook burying the series-winning goal. I mean, how cool is that to have a seven-game series, Game 7, in overtime? I mean, it doesn't get any better than that for hockey. But the Alex Newhook with the series-winning goal, Montreal Canadiens move on. And this is the first conference final for Montreal since, what was it, 2022, I believe, or 2021. It was 2021, sorry. So, Montreal, they move on. They'll be taking on the Carolina Hurricanes in the Eastern Conference Finals. Meanwhile, the Western Conference Finals, the Colorado Avalanche and the Vegas Golden Knights. So, I'm going to do my picks here really quick for the NHL Conference Finals. I'm going to go with the Western Conference. I'm going to go with the Colorado Avalanche. I think they might be past the President's Trophy curse. Obviously, the last several years, historically, whoever wins the President's Trophy not only seems to never win the Stanley Cup, but gets eliminated early in the playoffs. And the Avs were past that. They took down the LA Kings, didn't really have a problem with that. And then I figured if there was a series that they were going to lose, it was that second round series against the Minnesota Wild, but they were able to handle them. So, I mean, the Wild definitely made it an interesting series. But still only a, what, five-game series? Wild blew a chance to try to send it back to Minnesota for game six. Game six. So, I don't know. The Avs, they've only lost a single game in the playoffs. They're rolling, playing very well. Obviously, they were a very stacked team in the regular season. They got even more stacked at the trade deadline. And then they just they're continuing to roll in the playoffs, and the Vegas Golden Knights coming out of a very weak side of the bracket for the Western Conference. I mean, a ton of very bad teams there in the Western Conference that made the playoffs, relatively speaking, in terms of the entire NHL. I mean, granted, they had a couple of bad teams that probably shouldn't have made it anyways, due to the totally awesome and excellent playoff format by the National Hockey League. But, I think the Avs are going to smoke the Golden Knights. I think this is going to be a 4-0 sweep at most for Vegas, a gentleman's sweep. No more than five games. I see the Avs moving on. Meanwhile, you have the Eastern Conference Finals, a lot better of a series. You have the Canadiens, who have they themselves rolled through the playoffs. They had a four-game sweep of the Ottawa Senators. Bit of a hard-fought series, a hard-fought sweep, but a sweep nonetheless. And then they followed that up with a sweep of the Philadelphia Flyers. Two of those games needed overtime, but they're undefeated. And I think that's going to be the crash course for the Stanley Cup. I think it's going to be Carolina taking down this series. Part of me has a soft spot for Montreal Canadiens, Noah, original six team. I like a lot of the young talent that they have on that team. But Carolina, they're freaking good. I think Carolina, they were maybe a little bit underrated throughout the season. But that's a really good team. And I think it's going to be Carolina in the NHL, the Stanley Cup Finals against the Colorado Avalanche, which, if that ends up being the case, we're going to have a hideous-looking, uniform, visually bad NHL Stanley Cup Finals, because I don't like the Avs uniform. I mean, their home uniforms are fine, but their road uniforms are just awful. Just a weird clash of a blue and burgundy. I don't like them. Awful look. And then the Canadians have like a, they have a total identity crisis. They have three different uniforms. They all have like a different design to them. I don't know what's going on with their road uniforms either. Their white uniforms are like the red and black. Hideous. Hideous look. Fire whoever designed the uniforms for both these teams. Just awful. So, anyways, there's my conference finals pick for the National Hockey League. We will see. The conference finals officially start tonight. Sorry, tomorrow. We've got the Avs and Golden Knights tomorrow that start at 8 o'clock. And then the following night, Thursday, you have the Canadiens and Hurricanes in Game 1. Meanwhile, for the NBA, before I actually break this game down, I'm going to do my picks here. And I actually did have this team before last night's game. I actually had the Spurs over the Oklahoma City Thunder. I think this is probably going to be a 6 or 7 game series. But I think just based on matchup, I think overall, top to bottom, Oklahoma City has a much deeper, much more well-balanced team. But I think the Spurs, based on matchup with Victor Wembanyama, and they've got a lot of great defensive players on that team, I think they're built to beat a team like Oklahoma City. I mean, in the regular season, granted, all these games were very early in the regular season, but San Antonio actually went 4-0, I believe, against the Oklahoma City Thunder in the regular season. And now 5-0 on the season as they got the double overtime win last night. And Victor Wembanyama completely dominating. Of course, they had the MVP winner announcement, Shai free throw Alexander for the Oklahoma City Thunder, winning his second straight. And Victor Wembanyama, he was a finalist for the award. I think he was second, actually, in terms of the voting. I don't remember how that actually broke down. But, yeah, he was out for vengeance, and, boy, he got it. Unbelievable game for Victor Wembanyama. Finished with 41 points, 24 rebounds. Had a couple huge threes in that one, taking some big shots. So, I think the Spurs will win that series. Meanwhile, we have the Cavs-Knicks starting tonight. I have the Knicks. I think the Knicks will make it back to the NBA Finals since what, 99? Since the last time they made the Finals? I have the Knicks in this series. They're playing some really good basketball in the playoffs. I don't see why that would change, even though the Cavs, fresh off a big 7-game series, went over the Detroit Pistons. So we're going to leave it right there. This is On the Docket. Of course, we got the Tigers in action this evening, game 2 of their 4-game series with the Guardians. First pitch at 6:40 right here on Jackson's Fox Sports 101.9 FM. And otherwise, besides hopefully the Tigers winning a game tonight, we will chat more about a little bit of everything tomorrow. Peace.
If you missed today's installment of On the Docket, podcast it at foxsports1019.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to tune in live weekdays at noon on Jackson's Fox Sports 101.9 FM.